Shanti, Shanti.
Let's do verse 12.
Manoham kripyupadanam lingam ekam jadatmakam avastha trayam ambedi jayate mriyate tatha
manaha manas manaha ahankriti upadanam lingam ekam jada atmakam avastha trayam anveti jayate mriyate tatha. Little Sanskrit. So, manas means the mind. The ahankriti is the ahankara. So, the mind and the ahankara and the I notion. Upadana. Upadana is a technical term. Upadana means the material cause. Right, the upadana karanam. Karana means cause. Upadana karanam, material cause. Sometimes we just say upadanam by itself. So if I take this as a compound, manoham kriti upadanam, the material cause of the mind and the ahankara. Okay, so the material cause of the mind and the ahankara. Lingam. Lingam is another word for the sukshma sharira. Linga sharira, lingam, sukshma sharira. So lingam, linga is referring to the sukshma sharira, the subtle body. So the lingam, the sukshma sharira, which is ekam, which is one, you have one subtle body, you know, indwelling with the physical body. So this linga sharira, the lingam, is the material cause, right? So these are neuters, one, one. So the linga, which is ekam, which is one, is the mano ahankriti upadanam, is the material cause of the mind and the ahankara and the I notion. And that lingam, that sukshma sharira, subtle body, is jadatmakam. Its nature, atmaka means nature, doesn't mean the atma itself, it means the nature. Like rupa can mean nature. Its nature is jada. It itself is not consciousness. It reflects consciousness, but just like a mirror, it's reflecting, but it doesn't contain the sun in it, right? It's inert, it's jada. Like that, the linga sharira from its own standpoint is jada, but because it's sattva, it reflects consciousness. So here we have a string of nominatives. The main noun being linga. So the linga sharira, which is one, which by nature is jada, does not enjoy consciousness, is inert, so to speak, inert, doesn't have consciousness as its own swarupa, its own svabhava, depends on consciousness, being mitya, depends on consciousness, but itself does not have consciousness. It needs to reflect consciousness. So this linga, sharira, it is the material cause of the mind and the ahankara. We'll go into that in a minute. Then this linga sharira, this linga, the sukshma sharira, avastha trayam anveti. It experiences, it follows after in a sense, but it is the one who is present to, okay, the avastha traya. Avastha traya, the word avastha, technical term, it means a state of experience is an avastha. But now if we say the avastha traya, the group of three avastas, states of experience. And so the avastha traya stands for the waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state. So the avastha traya, your avastha trayam in the accusative 2-1. Okay. So the linga sharira experiences the three states of experience: waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. Jayate, nriyate, tathang, and similarly, it experiences birth and death, right? It is born and it is dies. What it means, the linga sharira isn't born and it doesn't die. But being, abiding in this physical body, when this physical body dies, then the linga sharira, with agnanam, can say, I'm dying, and then it discovers it doesn't die, right? Linga sharira is the one that transmigrates, taking birth after birth after birth after birth. But being identified with this physical body is going to experience the death of the physical body itself, never dying, okay? Nor experiencing any, never will it experience any death for itself, but being, you know, pervading the physical body is born and dies. And so the linga sharira, from the standpoint of the physical body, which is in, it is indwelling, is born and dies. But then I would have to say, yes, I've been born many times and I've died many times, right? So what kind of death is that? I've been born over and over and over again. I've died over and over and over. Okay, well, the one who has been born over and over again and has died over and over again has never been born and died, right? Not in reality, right? Because I'm experiencing birth and death. The idea here is that just as, just a little aside here, I'm going to tell you first, the avastha trayam means the group of three avastha states of experience. It's a technical term for waking, dream, and deep sleep. The group of three states of experience, avastha trayam. One very important prakriya, or teaching methodology that the Upanishads use, it's used in the Advaita Vedanta, is called the avastha traya sakshi. Sakshi means witness. So I am the witness, the sakshi, of the three states of experience: waking, dream, and deep sleep. Okay. Now, this use of the avastha traya sakshi, the prakriya which we're going to run through now, gives me a way to transfer over my understanding to birth and death itself. And the reason for that is that in these three states of experience, waking state, dream state, and deep sleep state, these three states of experience totally negate each other, right? For instance, when the waking state is here, the dream state is not here. The waking world is a different world than the dream world. So far, so good? The waking world is a different world than the dream world. The waking person, the waker, the character that you're identified with in the waking state, is a different character than the one you're identified with in the dream state, right? And so the waking world, including the body that you're identified with in the waking world, is different than the dream world and the dream body you're identified with in the dream state, right? And yet, I am the self, the one who is having the who is having this waking experience, means I am there present to the waking experience, and the one who is here for the waking experience is the one, is the me, that is here for the dream experience. So I can say, this is what I did yesterday in the waking state, and this is the dream I had. So there's what we call a pratyabhijna between the waking state and the dream state. Pratyabhijna is an identification of my presence in both states of experience, right? So I'm not going to have a pratyabhijna really from the standpoint of the waking, of the dream state, because I don't remember the waking state or the deep sleep state from the standpoint of the dream state, because there's no kartritvam, there's no really karma, there's just enjoyership of that experience. But from the waking state, I can remember the dream, right? And I remember it as my dream. that this dream I had, so it was me that was present to the dream, and also I have no experience. When I go into the dream, it's my dream. I don't have any idea that this is somebody else's dream. This is my dream. So the Atma, the conscious being that I am, this me, is the self of both the waking state and the self of the dream state. But why is it so important to recognize that? Because not only are there different worlds, when the dream state is a subtle world, the waking state is a physical world, there are totally different, two different upadis, two different conditioning agents. The body-mind-sense organs of the waking state is totally different than the body-mind-sense organs that you're identified in the dream state, right? Which means that the me that I am cannot be either one. If I can be the self of the person in the waking state and the self of the person in the dream state, I can't be either one of them. They both have to be as though dresses, upadis that, you know, that I'm identified with at the time that that's taking place. But those upadis are shed. Those upadis are shed and I still am. How can I be the self of both when each one of them, when they both negate each other? That's the situation. So this is actually an invaluable understanding, because experientially my being is not dependent on either waking universe or dream universe. Waking individual point of identification, dream point of identification. Waking upadi, dream upadi. Upadi means a conditioning agent that will take the ahankara. I am this, I am this. Even in the dream, you're identified with a dream character. Not with all of the dream characters, with a dream character. So that dream character is acting as an upadi for you. Right? From the standpoint of the dream character, I am that dream character. From the standpoint of the waking state, I am that waking character, this one here, who I'm identified with. But then, the me, who is actually me, cannot be either one of those upadis and cannot be dependent on either one of those universes, whether the subtle universe or the physical universe. My being has to be free of both of them to be present to both of them. So, we also have one more in this Avastatraya Sakshi, the deep sleep state. The deep sleep state, also understanding my relationship to the deep sleep state, is also very important, because in the deep sleep state, which now from the waking state, I can remember the deep sleep state and I can describe it. Usually in the Vedanta, they'll say something like, this is how they describe, have somebody describe the deep sleep state. You know, I slept so well last night, I didn't know anything. That's what they say, this over and over in the Sanskrit. You know, I slept so well, you know, I didn't know anything. So we can all say like that. We could probably say more things too. You're describing it. You're describing that state. You could also say, if you really get into it, in that deep sleep state, there is no subject-object relationship. I'm not even present there. I'm not commenting. You know, I'm not active in that deep sleep state to be able to say that I'm deep sleeping. Right? And so my whole mind is in unmanifest condition. If we want to talk about it a little technically, the whole mind is in unmanifest condition. There's no knower known relationship at all. You know, I simply am, and I know nothing. Right? And there's no one to say I simply am. And there's no one there to say I know nothing. You have to be awake for that. You look back and remember that experience. You say, this is what that was like. And we can all talk about it, and we say, oh, I had a very deep sleep also. Isn't that wonderful to have a deep sleep? I slept so well. Okay, go on talking. But now let's look at that deep sleep state, you know, which is one of the three avastas. In the deep sleep state, when the mind goes into causal condition, unmanifest condition, I am not a knower. Consciousness is not a knower. Consciousness will illumine, you know, the sattva. When the sattva is up, that means when the antakarana is up, when the mind is up, when the sense organs are up, that sattva is illumined, and then knowership, doership, all kinds of activity takes place. But when the mind, the sattva, is in its causal condition, in an unmanifest condition, there is no sattva reflecting my being. And so there is no knowership, because the Atma yourself is not a knower. Yourself, as we were sitting in the meditation today, and we'll continue to do so, but trying to make, to recognize that as I'm just sitting with my own being, or even now at this moment, recognizing me, my own self, I'm not performing any function at all. In fact, from the standpoint of me, I'm not knowing anything. I simply am, and I am self-evident me. I am self-evident being, self-shining being. I am not performing an act of knowership to know my mind. I am the conscious being because of which the mind is known. That's very different. Because consciousness, because of the sattva in the mind, we're kind of trying to tie this back into our previous verses in the Driktrisha. Because the mind is sattva, it reflects my nature. My nature is self-evident knownness. Self-evident knownness means I don't require a knower, because I am consciousness itself. And so my self-experience, we say, we have words for it, self-experience, the me, is swaprakasha. Swaprakasha means I'm self-shining, I'm self-luminous. Okay. That means to be self-shining, it means I don't have to have another light to come in to light me up. I don't have to have another consciousness come in to make me known. Like I do with anything within Maya, anything within the creation, I have to shine upon it. I have to have a subject-object relationship with it for it to shine, for it to be known. The only thing that doesn't require another pramana or some means of knowledge to shine, to be known, is consciousness itself. Otherwise, everything reflects off of consciousness. It's called anubhati. It reflects off of consciousness. You know? So, my being itself is self-evident knownness. It is known. Now, if I have sattva, like the mind and the sense organs, right, what is their experience going to be? If it's sattva and reflecting of my nature, if it's reflecting of my nature, it's going to be, it will exist, because I am, I exist, that my being, I am an existent being, and I am known, right? I am self-evident. So what is the nature that is of me that is reflecting in that sattva? It is, and it is known, because I am, and I am known, as self-evident consciousness. Whatever is reflecting in the sattva is, and it is known, right? And so now you think of any vritti, any thought modification that you have, without exception, if it is sattva, all vrittis, everything in your mind, every type of thought that you have, every type of emotion that you have is sattva, made of sattva. That means it will reflect your own nature. So what is the experience of everything that is sattva, every vritti? It is, and it is known. It is, it is known, it is, it is known, it is, it is known, without exception. Doesn't matter if the vritti is internal, if it's imaginative, if it's a meditative state, you know, if it's an emotion, if it's a dark state, if it's a psychosis. Does it, as long as it's the mind that is sattva that's having all of these strange experiences, those experiences are known because the sattva will invariably reflect my being. And so the knownness, the self-evident nature that doesn't require sattva is consciousness, is me. But in terms of the creation, sattva, that reflecting, sattva, rajas, and tamas, that reflecting nature is necessary for something to be known. The whole creation is known because sattva, rajas, and tamas pervade the entire creation. So the whole Ishvara Swarupa, the whole form of Ishwar and the form of everything that exists within time and space, that is also known because of the sattva. But the me, that itself is just pure conscious being, is not performing an act of knowing for these things to be known. See what I mean? That's extremely important. So when we go to the deep sleep state, we recognize, In the deep sleep state, when my mind is in unmanifest condition or in causal condition, the sattva is not up. What does that mean? There's no knowership. There's no subject-object relationship. Because that knowership or being known, in the dream, in the deep sleep, you don't say, I'm deep sleeping. You don't know that. Because the sattva, the mind, is in causal condition. And so then what it is, there's no commentary whatsoever. There's just me, my being, without anybody talking. No talking, no subject-object relationship, just being. There's also no death experience. There's just simple me-ness without any type of knowledge about that or commentary about it, as I will have in the waking state and at half-mast have in the dream state, because in the dream state, the mind is still up. Right? The sattva is still up. But the sattva, the antakarana and the antakarana, you know, and the sense organs, I would say, in the dream state, are not up. Only the mind. The mind now is withdrawn from the sense organs and from the physical body. And so in the dream state, just whatever vasanas, whatever impressions are held there in the citta are boiling up, or however you want to say. They're coming up into consciousness, and that's what you experience, that's what you call as a dream. That's why the dream is just experienced, right? There's no kartrutvam in the dream. There's just impressions coming up, telling their own story. There's affect coming up, all from the citta. With affect and experiences, impressions are coming up, creating a little dream story, you know, that in psychology we analyze. What is your psyche trying to tell us? Because out of the billions or countless number of impressions that are coming up, why these? What type of associative network is going on to pull up at this time these emotions and this conglomerate of vasanas of impressions to make this story? So psychologically, we will, in therapy, work with that type of thing. But look at what is actually happening. At the time of dream, let's say we're only partially, the jiva is only partially, the ahankara is only partially fulfilled at that time, so to speak, because there's no experience of the physical body, the physical world, or even of your sense organs or organs of action. It's only these vasanas which are creating an experience for us. And I can be identified with the body, mind, sense organs in that experience, but for the most part, no real doership of any kind. It's just boktritvam, the enjoyment, the experience itself. That's what we call the dream state. But at least the mind is up. The mind is up, the sattva is there. Right? If the sattva is there, there's reflection of consciousness, there's knownness for that experience. We always want to create a knower. That's the job of the ahankara, to create this knowership. But in reality, the sattva is up, there is knownness. The dream is known. In the waking state, the sattva is up, the sense organs, which are also sattva, are up, and then we have access to the whole physical world, you know, the objectifiable world, including this physical body. We have access to it through the sattva sense organs that create sattva vrittis in my mind, which are known. And that's the situation. But the ahankara, the strength of the ahankara, the I notion, which is brought about by, which is a product really of self-ignorance, is so ingrained, of course, because from beginningless time, you know, as long as there's not self-knowledge, I just have the ahankara wherever consciousness is, that is what I am. Right? I am that which is conscious. And so that would be, I am the body, I am my mind, I am my sense organs, I'm the body, even though the body's not conscious. I'm the body as long as it's alive, and I know that too. And then Donnie knows that I'm here as long as this body is alive. That's I'm fear of death. You know? Because right now I'm conscious, but I know that a body that's dead is not conscious. And so what's going to happen to me when this body is dead? Is there heaven, is there hell? Or is consciousness some sort of epiphenomenon of the physical body, that I don't know. So that's the ignorance. I know me as conscious being, but but it is completely, that's what we call this anyonya ajasa, this mutual superimposition with the body, because of the sattva pervading the body through the sense of touch, and with my mind which has sattva, the sense organs which have sattva, there's a mutual superimposition where my mind takes itself to be me, and then takes me to have all the qualities of itself. That's the mutuality. It's not that the Atma takes the mind to be something, to be me. The mind doesn't do anything. The self doesn't do anything. I just simply am. But the mind takes itself to be the conscious being, and then it takes the conscious being, me, to have all the qualities that it has. So then I become happy and sad and sorrowful and hurt and smart and stupid and whatever qualities that you kept me give to your own mind. Those are all become my qualities. Whatever, I am this body. The mind takes me to be the body, and then I gain all the qualities of the body. I'm a woman, or I'm a man, or I am tall, or I am short, or I am young, or I am old, whatever the qualities of the body happen to be, that is me. This is what we call mutual superimposition, right? Which is a product of ignorance, of self-ignorance. Because I have no, until I know, until I'm exposed to a pramana, a means of knowledge, I have no way, the mind, not me, you have no problem. The self by nature is free, it's liberated, it's whole and complete, and it always has been, always will be. But yourself is not a knower. It's not an experiencer. It's not a knower, it's not an experiencer, it is just self-evident me. All of the whole Maya Upadi, this whole Maya creation, and the jivas within it, you know, all of them enjoy my own being, the sat-chit, conscious being, from their own standpoint, you know. And so the body, mind, sense organs, called the jiva, enjoys consciousness. I am a conscious being, but without knowledge. Without any knowledge, so it doesn't have any viveka, any way to discriminate consciousness from the consciousness, the me, from the experiences that one is having. This knowledge has to take place. So this avastatraya sakshi prakriya is so important, because you can't deny it in the sense of what your experience is. You can't deny your experience that you are the self of states which totally negate each other or replace each other. Even the deep sleep state, where the lack of knowership, enjoyership is there, because the mind is in causal condition. And so that has to take away from awareness itself, from consciousness itself, knowership and doership. You know? Which is one of the hardest things to take away. Well, I'm not a knower. Mm-hmm. You are a knower from the standpoint of your mind and your sense organs. Right? But you require that mind and sense organs and that sattva to have the knowership capacities. But your being is not a knower. When you do the meditation, if I'm able to unfold it well enough in the meditation, you can realize that you don't miss being a knower at all. Your being is the very is totally whole and complete. Like if you ask, you just being with yourself, do I need to be a knower? Nope, not necessary, because there is no greater fullness than just your own presence. There's no lack. There's no lack in you to need to have any kind of experience other than just your own self. That's what we call the ananda, the freedom of your own being. Okay. So when they say the one who experiences all three states of experience, once we realize that the self, yourself, is free from waking, dream, deep sleep, then we can go to, and the self is free from birth and death. The linga sharira itself, which takes on this physical body, which is sattva and rajas. Sattva and rajas themselves don't ever experience any type of death. They're not physical. Linga Sharira itself goes in transmigrating based on karma, taking body after body after body after body. But I am the self even of that Linga Sharira. And so for me, from two different levels, there is no experience of death. For me, as conscious being, which cannot be objectified, you know, into a subject-object relationship, for me there's no experience, there's no birth and death, nor is there any experience of birth and death. But because the self doesn't ever go through any type of modification. For the Linga Sharira, there will be an experience, a changing experience, just like the Linga Sharira has the experience of the waking state. The Linga Sharira, experience of the dream state. Linga Sharira, experience of the deep sleep state, where the subject-object relationship is no longer there, but you have a memory of it from the waking state. So these experiences for the Sukshma Sharira, Linga Sharira, go on changing. Now what happens when this body itself dies, when this body drops off? Then we say the Linga Sharira, the Sukshma Sharira, then based upon the karmas at that moment of death, will attract new karmas to take another body and to go on transmigrating on and on and on. Will that Linga Sharira experience birth and death? In a sense, yes, because the experience changes. If I get on a plane and go from, you know, I go from Berkeley to Crete, definitely I'm going to go through a total, I'm going to land somewhere that I've never been before, right? That's a new experience. But it's still my experience. And so I don't have a death experience or a birth experience. I have a new experience. So experiences go on changing and changing and changing. And so when this body drops, you won't have a death experience. The body doesn't really have a death experience either, because the body is inert. This body is like a dress. Do you think when you throw your dress out, because it's old and worn out, you know, does it have a death experience because you've shed your clothes, you know? Are they dead now? Say, no, they were never alive in the first place. This body itself doesn't enjoy consciousness. It is pervaded by the Linga Sharira, you know, which has consciousness. And so there's an anyonya, there's a mutual superimposition here too between the Linga Sharira, the subtle body, and this physical body. It enjoys consciousness, and the Linga Sharira takes on its form. You know, so it appears as one, like a red hot iron ball. I am totally, as the subtle body, I'm totally pervading this physical upadhi, totally pervading. And so because the Sukshma Sharira enjoys, reflects consciousness, especially because of the sense of touch pervades everything, the consciousness pervades everything, then this body enjoys the consciousness of the Linga Sharira. And so the Linga Sharira becoming totally identified with this body from its standpoint also, because it suffers from ajnanam, from self-ignorance, will say, I am this body. Right? I am this body because I pervade this body. You know? How am I separate from the body? You know? Then we'll wonder, we go to the teacher and we ask, like Nachiketas in Katha Upanishad, does anybody survive when the body dies? Do I survive when the body dies? It's both the Linga Sharira asking that. Myself's not worried about it in any way. I just simply am. The Linga Sharira, the Sukshma Sharira, that's indwelling this body, do I survive death? Is there really a heaven, a hell, or hell? Is there really transmigration? This is Nachiketas. Is there anything about me that continues on? That is not subject to birth and death, and that is not subject to dharma, adharma, is not subject to sukha, dukkha, all the ills of this world? Is there anyone inside that is free of that? So Nachiketas, a young boy, asks this to Lord Death. Is there anyone who is free of this? And so Bhagavan, Lord Death, Yama, Lord Yama, gives him the whole Katha Upanishad to answer this question. So here, the point that's being made here is that the Linga Sharira, right, the Linga Sharira, when you recognize its relationship to the three states of experience, right, and then now you can recognize its relationship to birth and death, which really means its relationship to this physical body. Linga Sharira, which is not tamas, it's not on the physical plane, has no experience of birth and death. You know? But the question is, in so many ignorance, do I survive the birth and death of the body? Yes, you survive the birth and the death of the body. When the body dies, you will still be there. And when this other next body is born, you will be there. Because you are the one who is indwelling that body, and you are the one who leaves that body. So, but now, the next point in this verse. The Linga Sharira itself, though, is sattva. And therefore, wherever it is, wherever it goes, it reflects consciousness. It reflects me. I am there, right? Because of the sattva. So that reflection of consciousness is there. So when the Linga Sharira travels, I travel. I thought, Atma doesn't travel, but that reflection of sattva travels. You know, and so say if I have a mirror, you know, and I'm having it reflect the sun, as long as the mirror is focused on the sun, right, it's going to go wherever the sun is, right? It has to be focused on the sun. In this case, the sattva cannot but be focused on the self. The sattva itself exists. There is no way of escaping the Satchidananda Atma. Wherever the Sukshma Sharira is, there I am. There's even one verse, I guess it's in the Katha Upanishad, that says, say I have... I myself and my mind are going to have a race to the moon. Let's have a me, myself, and my mind. We're going to race to the moon. See who gets there first. One, two, three, go, okay? The mind goes like that, but the self is already there. Because the self, just like if you have an imagination, say you have an imagination, imagine. And in the imagination, some character says, let's me and my mind have a race to the moon. But the whole imagination takes place in me. I already am the self of the moon. And I'm self, the self of the intervening space. And I'm the self of the one who wants to have the race. I am the self of the one who wants to have the race. I am the self of the very moon. So I'm the self of the very mind. So wherever the mind goes, I'm already there. Right? So mind goes to the moon, I'm there the whole time, and when it gets to the moon, I'm already there. So I will always win the race, because my presence is already the adhishtana, the very being in which the whole creation exists. So in that way, myself is the conscious being which the Linga Sharira enjoys because of sattva. Because of sattva, only because of sattva. Sattva itself is jada. Sattva, jada means it's not conscious. It's inert. If there's anything, when we get to mitya, we'll say there's not really anything inert because there's not really anything there. But when we're making this differentiation now, this mind is jada because it depends upon consciousness in order to enjoy consciousness. The sattva reflects consciousness. And so dependent on consciousness, it shines. Without consciousness, it doesn't shine at all. Like say I have a mirror and the room is dark. It can't shine. Right? There's nothing for it to reflect. In a dark room, it itself doesn't do anything. So to remove consciousness from the Linga Sharira, then we wouldn't reflect consciousness. But as long as consciousness is there, it's not, consciousness is free from time. So as long as the Linga Sharira exists, which actually it does exist, the Linga Sharira will transmigrate until your final body is dropped. Final body is dropped is after you finish the prarabdha of having gained self-knowledge. Then no Sukshma Sharira, then just the sattva of Ishwara. There's no sattva for the Linga Sharira because the Linga Sharira is gone. This is just for students who've been here for some time. The Linga Sharira, the subtle body, is gone. You know, it dissipates at the time of knowledge once the prarabdha karma is over. And so there is no more experience for the jiva. The jiva, tuam, body, mind, sense organs, no longer there. Then what is the experience? Only Ishwara. I'm Ishwara now. But the limitation from the standpoint of this physical body is due to the Linga Sharira that's embodying this physical body. When this is gone, then what reflects? What reflects me? Is Bhagavan, Ishwara, the Sattva runs through the whole creation. And so even now, with or without knowledge, I am the self of the jiva, I am the self of Ishwara. Remove the jiva, that jiva is no longer participating, you know, in its normal relationship within the creation. And so then I just as I am, the very one from whom the creation has come, sustained and resolved. So for the jiva mukta, for the one with videha mukta, when the body is dropped, then I just abide as myself, as Ishwara. Yeah. That's just a little extra for some of you who have been around for a long time. So let's go to the next verse.
Shakti Dwayam Himayaya Ha Pikshe Pavritti Rupakam Pikshe Pashakti Lingadi Brahmandantam Jagat Srajet Shakti Dwayam Hi Mayayaha Vikshepa Avriti Rupakam Vikshepa Shaktihi Linga Adi Brahma Anda Antam Jagat Srijet. Shakti Dwayam 1-1. Wait a minute. Okay. 1-1. Shakti Dwayam. He Mayaya Vikshepa Avritti Rupakam. One sentence. Shakti we can just take as the power, the Maya Shakti. Here they're talking about Maya. I'll talk about Maya, but for now. The Maya Shakti, the capacity, they're saying that Maya has a twofold Shakti, twofold power, twofold capacity. Vikshepa Avritti Rupakam. In the form of Vikshepa Shakti and Avritti Avarana. Vikshepa and Avarana. These two Shaktis, so there's a twofold Shakti for Maya. Maya Yaha is in the 6-1, feminine. So indeed there's a twofold Shakti for Maya in the form of Rupakam, Vikshepa and Avritti. So you say Maya has this twofold power, Vikshepa Shakti and Avarana Shakti. Just to define Vikshepa means projection. Maya has the power to project, to create, to manifest the universe, to project the universe. That's called Vikshepa Shakti. Maya also has the capacity to avarana or avriti, to cover. Like for instance, a good example we use for this twofold power of Maya is the rope snake example. The Maya Shakti can cover the rope, the ropeness of the rope, projecting a snake, right? It both covers the rope from the standpoint of the jiva, it both covers the rope and it projects a snake. If you could still see the rope, the projection wouldn't happen from the standpoint of the jiva. For from the standpoint of the jiva, this we look at both powers. Maya has both powers. It has the power to cover and the power to project, okay? From the standpoint of Ishwara, as we'll see later, the Maya Shakti, there is no avarana, no avriti, there's no covering. There's just the Maya, the Shakti of Maya that projects the whole creation. There's no ajnanam, there's no avarana, there's no ignorance, there's no self-ignorance, because there's no limitation. There's nothing that you're identified with. But from the standpoint of the jiva, this Maya that that projects the whole creation, that Vikshepa Shakti, acts as an avarana, an avriti, a covering from the standpoint of the jiva. Because if you just think of it, you have a limited mind within an infinite creation. You have limited sense organs within an infinite creation. You have a linga sharira, the sukshma sharira, indwelling this physical body, which is in one small one time and place, one minuscule place in reference to the creation. Yeah, and one minuscule is too big of a word, minuscule time and place, you know, in reference to the whole creation. And so just by the nature of the upadi, which is made of this maya, which has this creative capacity to create, to project the whole creation, your knowledge must be limited. But this knowledge is limited with this limited mind and limited sense organs. I go on, sometimes Swamiji will say, scratching away at the ajnanam, you know, gaining knowledge, accruing knowledge as I remove the avarana, as my sense organs, as my means of knowledge are landing on the things that actually exist here and the relationships that exist. I am gaining knowledge of a knowledge, a reality that is already here. So knowledge, that's a wonderful thing to understand about knowledge. You're not creating anything, you're removing ignorance. Right? In the gain of knowledge, really, you're removing ignorance of what is. But from the standpoint of Ishvara, the whole manifest creation, that Maya Shakti that projects the entire manifest creation, you know, there is no ajnanam, there is no ignorance, because there's no limitation in terms of the upadi. You know, like say for instance, well, sometimes I'll say, if I ask you to have an imagination, you know, like imagine a beautiful scene along the beach, you just have an imagination, you're the Ishvara of that imagination. You have no limitation in reference to the imagination, where say I ask you to, okay, have an imagination and be a character in that imagination along with all of your friends walking around in that beach scene, you know. And then those characters actually do have a limitation, because they're experiencing this imagination from the standpoint of their own body, with their own sense organs, with their own limited mind. And so they will have limited knowledge compared to me as the Ishvara of that dream, who has total knowledge, aware of the entire of the whole projection itself. So that's the difference between us as jivas within the creation. The upadi itself is limited. It's actually called vyeshti upadi. This is a vyeshti upadi, a limited upadi. Vyeshti means limited, individual. Like for instance, the example they use for it is, say I have imagine a forest, and the forest contains many, many trees. So the name forest is for the samashti. Samashti means the whole group of trees comprise this big, huge forest that includes all of the trees. So I can talk about the forest, which includes everything, or I can talk about Vishti Upadi, each individual tree that makes up the forest. So here I can talk about the entire manifest creation as Samashti. The whole means this, the whole includes absolutely everything in it. That's Samashti. All Namarupa, all names and forms are included in the whole. So the whole is the Samashti Upadi. And that's Ishvara's form. Within the whole, there is all of the vyeshti, all of the individual forms. Those are each individual, each limited, each has only partial knowledge, small, what we call alpagnyaha, limited, small knowledge, a little bit of knowledge, alpagnyaha. Alpashaktiman means limited capacity. You know? Like, how strong are you? You know, what capacities do you have compared to Ishvara? It's absolutely minuscule, limited, right? So the Vyeshti Upadis are all limited. The Samashti Upadi, that includes everything in it, has limitless capacities because it's limitless. There's nothing outside of it. So all capacities belong to it. All knowledge belongs to it. So we have this term sarvajñaha, the one who is omniscient, who has all knowledge, as opposed to alpajñaha, little, the one who has little knowledge. So Ishvara is sarvajñaha. The jiva is alpajñaha, limited knowledge. Ishvara is sarvashaktiman, all power, all powers, all capacities. The jiva is alpashaktiman, the one that has limited, small, you know, little capacity. So now here, Maya, when we talk about Ishvara, we're talking about the one non-dual conscious being me, this me that is not an object within time to enjoy any type of limitation, and not an object within time and space. I am the conscious being, the me, in which all time and space takes place, in which the whole creation takes place. So, this Atma, self that I am, has Maya, has this capacity that we call Maya, to project this creation. So now say, if we're going to be getting into more of an analysis now for the next some time, let's look at Maya now, just for now, in this way. Maya is a capacity that is natural to the self, that belongs to the Atma. It's called an incidental attribute of the Atma, of the self, that can project, that itself projects the whole infinite creation, everything that exists within time and space on every level. You'll see this in detail later, but I just want you to understand is that now for me, for myself, if I am the one who is identified with the whole Maya Upadi, the whole creation, the manifestation of the whole creation, I am Ishvara. Then this whole creation becomes my Upadi, and then I am Ishvara, the one who has the Sarvajñaha, the one who has all knowledge, all power, the one whose form is all forms. That is me, Ishvara. If I instead am identified from within that manifest creation, that Maya, through Vikshepa, projects the whole creation, if I happen to be one of the projected elements in that creation, a projected individual within the creation, then that Maya acts as a covering for me, because the body, mind, sense organs, which are all products of Maya, are limited. And so that means that my knowledge and my experience is limited. So from the standpoint of the ones within the creation, you have only partial knowledge. You have a little bit of knowledge. Whatever knowledge this body, mind, sense organs is able to glean, to scrape away. So that's why we say this Maya, which is going to be responsible for the projection of the whole creation, has twofold powers. Vikshepa and Avarana, or Avrti. Vikshepa is the projecting power. Avarana is the covering power. From the standpoint of Ishvara, there's only the Vikshepa. From the standpoint of the Jiva, there is Vikshepa and Avarana. Missing the rope, I project a snake. Right? Not knowing myself, I project my being, or my Ananda, onto the world. That's my happiness over there. That's my Ananda over there. I need that to be happy. I project my being, the Satchitananda, I project my existence onto my body, mind, sense organs, and therefore I become finite. You know, I project my consciousness onto my sense organs, onto the sattva, and then therefore I take on all the categories, all of the qualities of the body, mind, sense organs. So that avarana is there because of the limitation of the upadi. That avarana is what causes limitation of the upadi. The upadi is part of Maya. The upadi is limited, and so therefore that Maya acts as a covering for my own being. Yeah? And because that covering is there, I project like mad, project my being onto everything, as we'll see in detail. So now all you have to understand, so let's look at this verse again. Shakti dvayam himayaya vikshepavriti rupakam. Maya has this twofold power, called Vikshepa and Avrti. Then it says the Vikshepa Shaktihi, this power that we call Vikshepa, is Lingadi Brahmanantam Jagat Srijet. This Vikshepa Shaktihi, nominative 1-1, feminine, Srijet. It creates Vikshepa Shaktihi, Srijet Jagat, Jagat Srijet. It creates the world. The Vikshepa Shakti Srijet creates, projects the jagat to one. Okay. What is the jagat? Lingadi, beginning with the Linga Sharira, the Sukshma Sharira, all the way to the Brahmantam, the whole physical universe. From the Sukshma Sharira to the physical universe. That is Bhagavan's projection. We can talk later about the subtle part of Virat and Hiranyagarbha, but take it like this, from the whole subtle world, from the subtle, from the Sukshma to the physical, of the whole physical creation. You can start from the Linga Sharira, this individual Sukshma Sharira, all the way to the manifest of the whole physical world. So that's it's going to include, for some of you who know, Hiranyagarbha, and then Virat, and the Taijasa, and then the Vishwa, Mandukya Upanishad. Virat means the physical world, Vishwa means the waker in the physical world, Hiranyagarbha means the subtle world, Ishwara, the subtle world of Ishwara, and Taijasaha means the subtle world, the Linga Sharira of the Jiva. So from the most subtle world to the physical world is what is manifest by Maya. Maya itself is in causal condition, is Prakriti. Right? So the Maya in causal condition, if we just say Ishwara is Brahman plus Maya, which is not manifest, that Maya manifests as the whole creation, Hiranyagarbha, the subtle Ishwara, we call Hiranyagarbha, and then the physical world that we call Virat. So the whole manifestation of everything that exists within time and space is the manifestation of Maya. Maya is viewed as an incidental attribute of Brahman, of the self. The Jiva is part and parcel of that manifestation. So there's quite a bit more to unfold about that, just so that you're clear on it. But we'll stop here and I'll do some more details next class. Oh.
Shri Guru Pyo Namaha Hari.